I'm Amy.
I'm Wendell.
And I'm Patrick.
And
this is
Yes
But Why
Podcast. Hey, thank you so much for sitting down with me and enjoying podcasting with me. I know you enjoy doing your show, and I'm glad that you get to join me on mine.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hey, first time going live for you.
Yeah.
What's that like?
I don't know. I don't usually censor myself too much, so I don't feel too bad. But yeah. It is pretty wild to know that somebody could be listening to this right at this very moment.
That people could actively chat in.
Yeah, that's
people,
true.
People could chat in questions, stuff like that.
You know, that's an interesting thing that perhaps we could use this episode to, like, talk to people about, too, just to start off, is, like, the idea of that we put together and are now part of the HD Universal Network.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I'm going to be doing some changes, listeners, lovely listeners. There's a few of my profile pages on a couple of the platforms that are being consolidated into HD Universal Network, as opposed to being just on my own. And the combined effort, I think, is probably better. We're doing a good job to provide lots of different shows with different points of view, and generally the response in the past couple weeks has been great.
It's been fantastic. We've had some really, really good online response just with the soft launch, just with like a general Facebook announcement, go check it out, stuff like that. We, within our first month doing stuff, and that was really the first month only had the launch at the last end of it, but over that month all of the shows on the network got like 10,000 listens combined. Like,
yeah.
It was pretty interesting. The way I was describing it to Mike whenever I was in Pennsylvania was, A, it's probably the only communistic effort I will ever venture into.
What?
Because, quite honestly, it's the idea of we're all helping each other lift each other up.
You know what, though? I actually recently got into a discussion with people about podcasting in general. And mm-hmm. I think that podcasting, while the idea would be that we're all in competition, we're not. Because there's so many different conversations to be had.
Yeah.
And so many different points of views to be put out there that it doesn't matter how many podcasts there are. It doesn't matter how many podcasts there are about any of the things that even you and I are already talking about.
Absolutely.
There's a person in the world who sees it a different way, whose life has made them have different experiences and relate to it in a different way, and it all matters. So.
Well, and there's also, I mean, never forget that there's always the place for the local voice. Even amongst broadcast, there are local talk shows. There are local talk shows on AM and FM interwoven with the national talk shows that come in and bring in huge money, big money to the stations, that kind of stuff. So, but it is, like I was explaining to Mike, the way I put this is that more horses carry the cart farther with less work.
Sure. Yeah.
So, if there are seven of us, if there are seven shows, and I put an episode out, and you share it, and they share it, and they share it, and they share it, and they share it, yeah, like, metrically, we're going to reach a larger audience.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that, it's not rocket math. But it's not even, like, cooking math.
But there's also the altruism of people who are on, say, social media. There's different groups that
exactly.
we are a part of, both on Facebook and Twitter, mm-hmm. that are communities of other podcasters that are all trying to help each other. And I think that's a really important part of it, is to keep yourself open and kind to other people.
Well,
so it's not like, mine's the best.
No. And a prime example of that is Austin Podcast Connection, the group that we started for that exact reason. Like, why don't we make a space where, because a lot of podcasting groups like, don't post your episode here, you know,
which is funny
to me, but that was the whole purpose behind our group, was this is a place to come share your episodes.
Yeah.
This is a place to come announce things, like if you're going out to do a live event with your show, let everybody in the community know. And it was funny to me the other day because we've been talking for a while about doing a meetup with Austin Podcast Connection.
We're very busy.
We're so busy. I'm on the road so much. You're so busy with theater stuff, writing, and of course with Dalbus. Literally the other day I saw somebody like, hey, who wants to go out and have coffee? And I was like, oh my God. Like, they just started doing it on their own.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the community just kind of self-regulates itself and supports itself. And people ask each other questions, you know, ask each other advice, share stuff. And it's really great to kind of see that seed be planted and grow.
So. Speaking of planting seeds, a year ago, or more than a year ago, we planted a seed that is now a tiny baby.
Very tiny.
He's not so tiny, actually, I guess. No. He's a pretty big baby, and he just turned one just this past Friday.
Yeah.
And it was wild. Wild to imagine that... imagine that we had a baby, that like this child had a full year of time with us, right? And that's super fun, and I've enjoyed my time with him. But how do you feel like the having a baby has changed the way we are? Because first and foremost, you and I make, you know, the bulk, if not all, of our money doing creative stuff. We have various creative jobs, and, you know, there's certainly discussion in the world that when you have a kid, you have to let go of those kinds of things. What is your thought on that?
And you know, it's different. It's different because, for me, I've never had that sacrifice. You know, you've told me for years that it's BS whenever I thank you for being such an understanding wife and everything else, and for adult, like, good God, even Dudes and Beer whenever I started it. That, but like, you were there at the inception. We were driving home, and I was like, I think I'm going to start another show. Like, I don't hang out with people. I don't do anything, so I'm going to start a podcast where I get together and I have conversations about stuff with people and we have beer. And, you know, it'll force me to, like, hang out with other people outside of my industry. Because, only people I hung out with were, like, people that I work with. You know, it'd be like we'd be on the road, we'd hop out and have a drink or dinner after work. You know, like, you'd come pick me up and we'd have, like, a couple drinks downtown while I was waiting on you to come pick me up in traffic or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, but that was it. Everybody that I hung out with was literally within my industry. They it's not that they aren't friends, it's that I've met them through work. I have work friends.
Everything we do is work related.
I have plenty of friends in Houston where I grew up and stuff like that. But here in Austin, most of them are work related. And it became this concept of like, I am almost 40 years old. Like, I need to do something with myself. I need to do something.
Like in a social way? Because I feel like by 40 you had done a lot of things.
Oh, no. I definitely accomplished a lot of things.
But
I
like
definitely
socially.
Got a lot of things. Yeah, like it was like, man, I got like no social life.
Yeah.
So that's where Dudes and Beer
came from.
I also have
no
from.
Social life.
But you kind of do. You know, you're out, you're teaching, you're talking with people, stuff like that, you know.
Sure.
I'm interacting with people on a daily basis, but it's definitely in a professional atmosphere where it's like, hello, sir, let me put this microphone on your tie. If you could, just make sure your cell phone is off or just not on your person whenever you get on stage. Your microphone is on. It's locked.
Chris, you're not at work. Chris.
Yeah, like, that's my conversation with people.
Your eyes just became little curly cues like the Twilight Zone,
like
there.
Hypnotizing talk. I'm going to talk you through tech things now, Mr. Untechnical.
Well, I mean, but the thing that you have done since we had the baby was essentially work a ton more.
Oh no! When we had Dalbus, if you recall, as soon as you were salient.
Salient. I don't know if that's a word that means what you're
trying
to say.
As soon as you were like there, and we could talk, you know, because there was definitely like this haze going on.
Of what? After the baby?
Yeah.
You know, like, what are we talking
it
about?
It was like within the second day after all the hubbub was done, and it was just you and I and the baby, and I held the baby and I looked at you and I was like, now we form an LLC. And that immediately became my mentality, was protect this child. By all means necessary, create a buffer zone between your business, what you do, the cables you put on the ground, that if somebody trips, they cannot come take the car that takes your baby to the doctor. Mm. So, and then along with that came the double down on everything. And it's the fact of, I will try to double the amount of work I get.
I think you've done more than that.
I think I've done more than that.
Yeah.
I will try to double the amount of output I produce, like, in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my constant push of projects, of creativity, of doing those things.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, all too often, I think, and, you know, for a long time, people asked us, because we got married late.
Mm-hmm.
But what most people would think is late.
Mid-30s, that's late.
It's pretty late. I took a long time researching my mate and what I wanted. And, you know, anybody that I was asking to be in... Well,
I was highly rated on the catalog.
She was. many stars.
Yeah.
Many stars were there.
A lot of reviews.
But, you know, as opposed to most people, like, I had a business. So whoever I brought in had to understand that, like, I have a business. This is something that I do. It ain't always great. It ain't always awesome. Sometimes it sucks because I'll be, like, out working a Christmas party, and it's Christmas Eve. I'd love to be there with you, but my work requires me to go work right now. And you being in entertainment, we're very much the same way. Like, I'd love to hang out with you Saturday night. However, see, I'm a performer, and I'm on stage Saturday night.
Yeah.
So, we lived a different life to begin with, and a very charmed life in that right.
Mm-hmm.
I think because we were both creative people to begin with, and it was something that I don't think either one of us necessarily would have sacrificed for somebody else, because we didn't see a need to sacrifice. Like, why would I have to sacrifice something that is an integral part of me?
Well, interestingly enough, and I think that's a larger thing to speak to us marrying late, is that I think the longer that you wait into your adulthood being independent to get married and to become a duo as opposed to a singleton, you are, it's harder for you to combine. It's harder for you to let go of the things that you are used to doing.
Yeah.
You get, I mean, you think older, like very older people are set in their ways, but all of us get set in our ways.
Oh, sure.
You know, once you're an adult and you get to be the person who makes the decisions for yourself, it's real hard to, like, let go and allow somebody else to make a decision for you.
Mm-hmm.
So combining, I see that happening, I think, with a lot of couples, is that people don't, like, accept the fact that they have to combine and they have to start compromising. And that even though, yeah, they're 35 and they never thought they'd have to, because it was quite a bit from the day they left their parents' house, but it doesn't matter. Now the vibe has to change.
Yeah. Well, and I remember distinctly, right after you left working at Print Globe, your last, like, straight, steady job,
mm-hmm.
where it was, like, job.
Yeah.
You know, and whenever I say that, like, straight job, that's what I mean. Like, 9 to 5,
yeah, like,
you go in,
job,
you clock in.
Doing a job that is,
yeah,
somebody else's
and,
dream.
And
I'm
people laugh
them.
Whenever I say that, but, you know, like, yeah, cooking was always my straight job. Any town that I moved into until I found gigs and got things up and running, I could go to a kitchen and I could cook.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere, all the time, anytime. So, that was you had a job for a long time that you went to day in, day out, and I guess it was probably about a month after being fully self-employed, where you were doing nothing but teaching comedy, stuff like that. You were like, "Wow, I don't know how you do this. Like, it's so hard to stay focused and just like make sure that you're doing something all day long, you know, to keep a critical mass of work going." And
I
like,
still don't know.
yeah, like you have been an anchor and a rock for me in life, and someone who is more than the wall that I throw things upon to see if they stick.
All of these, even though anchor, rock, and wall would seem negative, he means them positively.
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, whenever I'll, sitting behind you right now is my workbench for Austin Hot Mods, and though it sits idle and I haven't done a lot of work with it, it was there for a long time, and it provided a lot of opportunities. It provided a lot of meeting people opportunities. It got us into the studio that we're in. You know, it was a stepping stone for a lot of things. And that was one of those. I started that right after you started going freelance. I had started doing broadcast work, and I was working like
Oh,
50
yeah.
something hours a week. And we were kind of passing ships in the night, and we were okay with it. I'd come home at about 3 in the afternoon, and you'd leave at about 5 in the evening. And by the time you came back at midnight, I was typically crawling into bed already, because I had to be up and at the studio at 5:30, 6 a.m. So, you know, I started Austin Hot Mods out of something to do while you were gone. Like, I had nothing else to do. I didn't just want to sit and watch TV. So I started a business while I was working 50 hours a week. And I guess it's just the fact of I can't not do, if you get that.
No, I do.
I can't not be busy, either in my head. It's hard for me to slow down. It's hard for me to take time.
I think that's kind of where the wall, this time negatively,
Yes.
That I'm hitting. As far as that, because like when I moved to a new town, like you said, like we're talking about, you know, we didn't get together until our, you know, our 30s. So there was a lot of time. We were adults and we figured out ways to deal with stuff. And when I moved from city to city, and same when I moved to Austin, the way that I got myself into a town, into a community, would be to find a theater and then just get myself involved super hardcore. Do as much as I could, get as involved as I could, and, you know, just really do as many projects as I could figure out. And, you know, as time has gone on and I've become a mentor to other people, I've realized that having a couple of choice projects that I can dedicate my time to versus a million that I'm sort of half-assing is certainly better. But I still do always have that impetus to, you know, immerse myself into a project. And there's still things that I creatively crave I could be doing right now. And the thing that I'm hitting is that my current creative project is raising the boy. And it's hard because it doesn't feel creative in the same way. And I'm trying to embrace it in a way that is, you know, oh, this is because I was giving advice yesterday, and you know how helpful that is. But, you know, I was giving advice about the idea that, like, even when times are tough, even when you're at a low point, you've got to try to see what the world around you is trying to tell you, what wisdom there is in existence, like what it is that you are doing. Because we ebb and flow, we change, we become different kinds of people as we get older.
Oh, most
We
definitely.
use the lessons that we have built along the way to then jump off and become a new person, right? But I don't think my new person that I'm working on becoming is less creative. Perhaps it's just the focus of the creativity is different. Still, I've been having a tough time sort of lessening or, you know, making, doing fewer things in a way that, like, you know, I want to be super involved at the theater and I want to be, you know, doing improv and teaching and all this stuff. And it's just the time and finding a babysitter and all that stuff is sort of holding it back. And I'm just having a hard time being okay with that.
Sure, sure. Because you being the busybody that you are.
Busybody's not the right word.
No?
Busybody means a person who's nosy and wants to know about other people's stuff. Okay. Is that what you mean?
No, no.
No, you I mean like a busy person.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody who wants to be active. Somebody who's just...
Wait, no, I'm not a busybody.
Moving, crack-a-lacking. Yeah. I gotta get... hey, man, like, let's roll.
Yeah.
let's do something.
Let's just get this work done.
Yeah. You know, okay, we're all here. Let's get this done. Bam. Let's go. I got another thing to go to.
Right.
And you've always been active like that. You've always been, and it is hard to let that go. It's tough.
Yeah.
I'm getting to the point, especially since I apparently manifested all this work.
Be careful. You manifested the hell out of traveling around the country.
Be careful, folks.
And doing 1,000 conventions all over the world. I think it's cool.
Oh, it's great.
I mean, it's sad that you're far away and I miss you. We used to spend all day, every day together, like, doing the things that we were doing, and now we really hardly see each other. But it's almost nice that you brought up the ships in the night moment from before, because it's like, oh, okay, we're fine.
Oh, yeah.
Also, I guess we did do long distance for, like, 2 years. So it's not like we're immune to spending time apart.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a little bit different now that Dalvis is here, and I was here hardcore for like the first 6 months
mm-hmm.
of his life, and right up around Thanksgiving, Christmas is when the travel work really started for me, and it's been pretty much straight out since the new year, and it has been great. It's been fantastic. It's been a huge help for the family, and I'm more than happy to do it. And even that requires a new definition. Like, it blew people's minds whenever I moved here and I started doing corporate AV all the time instead of rock and roll, because that's what I did. I did music. I found corporate AV and ran arms wide open.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah. So, in your situation, trying to redefine yourself, at least for the next few years, like you said, I liked the way that you put it, saying that, you know, you're trying to mother creatively. You're trying to find different ways of doing it. And
well,
I like
it's not
that.
Like I'm like, I mean, I'm not like trying to, you know, reinvent the wheel or anything like that. I just mean, like, I'm creative,
yeah,
and my efforts are that. So what can I do, and how can I let him inspire me?
Yeah,
you know, like he's inspired me to a lot of like interesting like lessons when it comes to teaching acting and the experience of emotion. Like that's been something that I've been really into, learning a new person from the beginning and being like, what is our natural, because children are the us in our natural states, and when we get the hormones of puberty, that's when we get the dark cloud of self-doubt. And right now he's in a perfect state, so I'm trying to witness the perfect state as much as I can, so that then I could try to figure out how to teach improvisers who are trying to reach the perfect state,
yeah,
as adults, how to do that in a better way. So I feel like right now I'm kind of in research mode, you know, just watching him, seeing what's going on. I've been reading books on storytelling and improv communication, just different stuff like that. But I don't know. I'm in a weird place.
Yeah.
I'm in a weird place. I feel like, blah, 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 blah.
I can definitely appreciate that. I mean, good God, look at the studio that surrounds you right now.
It's a little messy.
Used to be clean and immaculate, and now like a workbench is just stacked with stuff.
I don't know that I've ever known a day when this was immaculate. But
yeah,
but it certainly was cleaner.
It's been much more functional than it is right now. And, you know, there is definitely, I think, a sense of discombobulation going on right now. And a lot of that is us trying to kind of both of us figure out what we're doing, where we're going, what we need to focus on. And, you know, it's become fairly prevalent to me in my travel work and my network.
Yeah.
My travel work and the network. Those are the two that will sustain.
Yeah.
So those are the two I choose to focus on. Because, A, the network will be something that, despite any retirement from physical labor, moving 18-wheelers full of gear and pushing stuff down hallways of convention centers, despite any of that, I can still sit behind a microphone. I can still produce shows.
Come on, you might retire from actually being the person that pushes that box down a hallway, but you'll end up being the guy who books the guy that does it, or the guy who stands at the end with a clipboard going, what are you guys doing this faster? What are you guys doing? What are you lollygagging down there? I don't know that, even though the network is definitely a good creative, like, outlet, and I believe in it both in a, like, in the way that you do, where it's like, you know, there's good business there, and it's a great way to connect to a larger audience. I like to think of it in a way that is like examining the way we are connecting with each other, and using the new technology that we have at our fingertips. As that changes, how does it affect the way we as human beings seek to be together? And there's a lot of isolation, mm-hmm. both in our current world with technology and the ability of, I mean, we used to be, the idea of working freelance used to be very unusual. And now we live in a town where, like, it is one of the best towns for freelance work because so many people do it. And the whole paradigm of jobs has changed. People don't work somewhere for 40 years anymore. People hardly have full-time jobs. Everybody's contract labor for every industry. Like, it's not like just creative, right?
Yeah.
So we are one of many people who are out potentially alone working in their home doing whatever job that they do in front of a computer screen, right? And so because of that isolation, and I feel isolation as a mom, and there's other moms I talk to that feel it too, we seek to connect, and we use the internet in the best way it could be used, which is to connect with each other and to hear each other's stories.
Well, and it's interesting, though, that you even bring that up, because it's something that we talk about all the time on Dudes and Beer, is the fact that even though we are more connected than ever, we are more disconnected than ever from each other as a society.
Yeah, I think it's part of it. I think it's like, it's almost like the magnets. You know how we got that little magnet train for the baby's birthday,
yeah.
And it's like a bunch of little train cars that each have a letter in his name, and one magnet connects and the other magnet, you know, deflects. And I feel like,
well,
that's
kind of how
they'll
connect,
we are.
But they won't connect like bink in the end smooth. It'll be
off, like, to the side,
yeah.
Kind of. Well, it's because
yeah.
Regardless, the way that it makes me think of is the way people are. People want to be near each other, but it's anxiety-ridden to actually interact with each other. I mean, think about concerts where there's multiple thousands of people holding their phone up at a person who's performing for them. There's a human being in front of them doing a thing that they like, that they do. And instead of experiencing it directly, they put this thing in between them because it buffers them. It makes them feel like they have it. And a lot of people are like, oh, I'm just sharing it. Why? Who cares? Who's going to watch? Who's watching those videos? Like, come on. But if you know.
Not just that. Those people should have bought a ticket if they wanted to come share that experience.
Right? Oh, you know. Or... Or how about that musician will probably release whatever this concert is after the concert tour is over in some sort of video form. So wait, like, you know what I mean? Like, you're not getting the best experience.
Be cool, support your musician.
Which makes me think that it's not that they're really trying to experience it or even share it. It's their buffer, right?
Yeah.
It's like that movie that I'm always talking about that we watched again recently about surrogates. People want to have a buffer in between them. And even though... we crave, as human beings, we want to be in groups. And why do you think cities are such a thing? We want to be close to each other. We need to be close to each other. I mean,
there's
mob mentality is a bad... There's safety in numbers, and there's mob mentality. We get the good and the bad in droves with large groups. In smaller groups, it gets weird. It gets crazy. Think about the weird people that live up in mountains or like in air or in towns that have like, you know, 10 people in them. I'm not saying they're entirely
weird.
There is
nothing wrong with mountain folk.
No, I'm just trying to say when you have fewer people, the way you interact is different.
Absolutely.
And in fact, I betcha the smaller groups talk to each other face to face.
Come on out to Mamou, Louisiana sometime.
No, I'm just saying.
The town
like,
that my family's from.
Right.
One red light. And, yeah, people talk to each other. I remember going to church my first Sunday there and sitting there and hearing, like, pretty small church, old church, marble floors and stuff. You could hear a pin drop in this church. And I'm up front, and I'm praying, and I can literally hear people in the back like, who's that? I've never seen him here before. Is he, like, so-and-so's son, maybe? Didn't he go into the military? Like, just like all these conversations about who's this strange dude in church? Like, this redhead just randomly appears in your church in Mamou, Louisiana.
Ginger shows up and you get real nervous, is all I'm saying.
But it is. It's a totally different mentality. And, like, the world has slowed down a little bit. And, like, yeah, you talk to your neighbor by the mailbox. You know, you see your neighbor at the Piggly Wiggly, you know, stuff like that. It is the world, and the world exists, but at the same time, it's kind of this almost rejection of the world at the same time of like, we don't need all that.
So in all the big cities, they are also trying to achieve that same connection, that same, we're fine as a unit, we don't need the rest of these people. There are smaller communities. In Austin, right now, I'm part of the improv community.
Mm-hmm.
It is a handful compared to the large overall population of Austin, but it's a solid group, and they... converse and have discussions and change policies and think about what we could do as a team. Like, that's how it works. And then there's smaller factions of that. You know, it's like tribes. You know, they want to be together. They have their team. And the thing that it is that those people, and I think this is the case because, you know, otherwise how would all of entertainment work? But human beings are interested not only in this connection with people that are like them, but they're also fascinated by the people who are not like them.
Yeah.
Like, what? You see the world that way? Or, oh man, I can't believe it. So that's the beauty of the internet being having born all of these podcasts, all of these different voices, telling kinds of stories,
absolutely,
sharing their life, wherever they live. Like, my favorite are listening to ones in other countries, or I recently had a guest who said to me that he learned so much about people in the United States because he started guesting on podcasts, and just interacting with different people in the United States changed his preconceived notion of what we were like. And I thought, that is fascinating. I love that. I think that that is so interesting. But it wasn't like he went on one podcast. He went on like 25 all across the country to see what different people were like along the way. And I think that that was just the most fascinating thing for a writer to do, to like see in the world.
Yeah.
And to meet different kinds of people. And I really, I mean, I want to sink my teeth deeper into, you know, what creativity could be. And I think for me, I'm always trying to dash expectations. Like, I'm like, oh yeah, you think I can't do it? Well, I can! And that's always how I've been my whole life.
Sure.
But with this motherhood thing, I just don't know how to get into it. It's like, you know, it's like the next level in a video game, right? It's
sure.
not the same things. You don't have to jump the same way. It's not the same ins and outs. You don't have to press the same level, you know, like number of, you know, buttons here and there to get to a thing. It changes. And you have to learn the new way. And you're crap at it at first because you're like, man, this is new and different. But then eventually, after you keep doing it, it gets better.
Well, See,
anyone needs just need to talk it out.
It's just like any trained reflex. It's just like any muscle. It's just like learning to push buttons to make things happen up on a screen. And when you see a flicker, the 85 solutions that run through your head of what may have caused that.
Mm-hmm.
It's wash, rinse, repeat, wash, rinse, repeat, wash, rinse, repeat. Eventually, you don't even have to look at what you're washing. You just do it. It's rote memory. It's kind of like comedy for you.
Sure.
It is a muscle. And it is a repetitive process. And it is a, what is our scene? What kind of scene are we doing? That's at the beat structure.
Sure. How is it working?
You know,
how are we going to communicate? Where are we? Yeah.
There's the improv element, but even amongst the improv element, there is a generalized framework.
You know, I love me some structure.
Within that improv.
Any one of you who have ever taken an improv class from me know how much I love some structure.
And that's just it, you know. And it's really about you learning to kind of rewire yourself and these responses that you have and the ways in which you learn to deal with that.
Sometimes I think that television shows for children, like all the different stuff, are just creative parents just trying to work it out.
Well, that's why you're
like, oh god, how can I keep doing what I'm doing?
That's why you see parents with like four or five kids, and yeah, it looks like somebody just out playing a game of tennis. Oh yeah, you know, how's it going? Bam, bam. You know, and someone who goes out and plays tennis, they going out and playing a game of tennis. Try to go out and play a game of tennis. Chase that ball across a court like three or four times real quick and see what that's like, folks. It ain't as fluid as you think.
Explain your metaphor.
It takes a long time for that muscle to become the karate response.
So what you're saying is the person with the five kids is a...
They're black belt, bro.
Okay.
They're black belt. They have felt the arm on their shoulder and judo thrown somebody so many times, it is an instinctual response.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even have to think about it. Whereas for you, it's an effort right now to, okay, I gotta grab a wrist, I gotta grab a shoulder, and I gotta like get my hip up. Hold on, man. Hold on. Let me get my hip up around you. All right. Cool. Again.
Yeah.
Again. Again. And it's doing that same thing again and again and again and again that trains the muscle. It even trains the brain to respond.
Yeah.
You know? And it, like, you make comedy look so fluid on stage because you've been doing it for 20 friggin' years almost.
Yeah.
You know? So it makes it look fluid. It makes it look easy. But it's really a trained muscular response within your brain. It's a trained response of, you hear this, that happens. Like, you don't even think about it.
I appreciate you saying that because because I feel like I say that to other people all the time. I mean, this is like, it's like the center of how I teach improv to my level ones, which is like, you don't have the mental ability to truly do this yet, but it is a thing that you can develop, so just keep working at it and it will get better.
In my
The first couple times are not going to go well.
Nope.
And we're going to be cool with that as a group. We're going to be like, it's fine, that didn't go great.
Nope.
But the more you try it and the more you do it, the easier it'll be and the more, like you said, a muscular response.
That's just it. Now, in my industry, I explain it to people as it's not that you don't know what to do, it's that you don't have time on gear.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you don't know the motions. It's that you have not had the time to sit behind gear and just push buttons.
Yeah.
And see what buttons do. See what knobs do. And just to play with gear. Like, you look behind me, I got days to sit back and play with gear.
You have so much gear.
I got an insane amount of gear. So I got time to sit back and practice things. You know, if I got a dead day, I can absolutely hook up my video mixer and get two or three inputs going and, you know, just learn and sharpen my skills and hone my skills and stuff like that. And much like you, like I've told you, when Dallas takes a nap for an hour and a half, right?
It's super hard to do that.
I know.
I want to, and I feel like such a failure when I don't. Exhausting to
it
take
is.
Care of a child.
Oh no, that's why most
he's
of the time
just like he's just all around, and he's like,
even your cousin Georgia, yesterday whenever she was here, we were both in the kitchen. She was like, "Man, I don't know how y'all do." She's like, "I don't know how you do what you do and come home and deal with that." She was like, "Cause like when I watched him the other day, like I needed a day off." She was like, it is everything to keep track of that. And she was like, I don't know how somebody can like go to a job for 8 hours and come home to a baby.
I don't understand. I also just realized that everybody doesn't put their baby to bed at 6:30 as well, though. So whenever I talk to people who have jobs, I'm all like, but so you pick them up when? From daycare? And then you hang out with them for what, 10 minutes? And that's it? And they're like, no, he's up for 3 or 4 more hours. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
What? Yeah, I mean, if I didn't... When I put him to bed at 6:30, that's my alone time.
Let's dive into that for a second, though, because think about that in terms of just like we're talking about muscular memory, training the brain, everything else. That is literally putting the child's brain into a worker bee schedule.
What do you mean? You mean by sending them to daycare and then they get picked up and then they have dinner and then they go to bed?
Like, it sets up, and we're on a totally different schedule. And
I know,
that's what I've told people. Like, whenever we had, Ruth Feigenshue, prime example, homeschool kid, you know, amazingly bright. There's nothing wrong with having a parent at home all the time. Our kids going to go to public school, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Should we be able to afford maybe an academy at some point? But the important thing is really the formative years and time spent with children, talking with them, talking to them, reading with them, interacting with them, doing all that kind of stuff. And that's what I refuse to allow to be interrupted between the age of birth and 5.
Maybe, but think of that parent you were talking about before that's got the 5 kids. They don't have time to spend like quality time with each one of them. They kind of like, you know, batch do it. You know what I mean? Like that's how they are accomplishing that task by having so many of them. They're not having like, you know, deep discussions with each one of the kids.
Yeah.
Like sometimes I worry about that. Not only am I home and providing him a, you know, a bit of a weird schedule, but also, like, you know, there's nobody else around for him to talk to. And believe me, I've thought about it and we've discussed it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not into the second kid for sure. But, like, But, like, I still worry, you know, like, how's that going to go? And I just hope he makes friends and stuff like that.
Well, sure.
And I think about how daycares, even though some people say that the problem with daycares is that the people don't spend as much time with each person, sometimes I think that might be the benefit of daycares. That these kids get to, well, not all of them, of course, but the ones where the teachers are good at doing the batch training, like I said. And
at a certain age,
that way a kid
yes.
can interact with another kid, and they can yes. figure out kid stuff in a kid way, as opposed to sure. a kid and an adult yeah. has to kind of hold back some of the stuff they know so that that kid can learn. And
yeah,
there's always
if you
that
don't
weirdness.
Have enough if you don't have enough adults per kids, it'll turn into like a toddler Lord of the Flies before you know it.
I know, but I mean. I mean, but that maybe that's natural, is all I'm saying. saying, like, all I'm saying is I want to, he needs to learn how to fight
like
to the death, is what I'm saying.
You come back
say.
To pick a kid up and there's, like, a guinea pig on a spit.
Yeah.
And, like,
all I'm saying is the daycare I'm looking
two,
for is UFC
The two care
baby.
Workers are, like, tied up to the column.
Yeah. They're gagged.
With Barney on repeat.
Just
eyes,
the one section.
Eyes taped open. I love you.
I hope they don't play that anymore. Is that still a thing?
It is a thing.
Oh, God. That's ridiculous.
But yeah, you know, just going into that, it's different. Like, we live a different life, and it blows a lot of people's minds. It blew your mind before you left your day job and went full-time freelance. That
now I'm full stay-at-home mom with occasional
sure.
freelance.
Sure, sure. But even then, learning the things that you're learning, learning how to organize things in a different way, all valuable, and. You know, like I said, it's you choose to spend your time now on more quality things. That's how I've chosen to look at it as I've gotten older. Is that, you know, yeah, I could go out and join a band and hack around with a bunch of dudes. Why? I can sit at home with my stuff and make music all day long. Not have fights, not get into drama.
Yeah, but
not have that.
But
stuff.
That brings us back to what we were talking about earlier of the like isolated people or being part of a community. Like
sure.
I know that it's hard to be in a band, but I feel like at some point you probably should be. Maybe not now, but like in the future when you're an older dude, then like get into a band then because like. Really, the natural animal way in which we as human beings have to interact with each other to create an alliance, it's an important skill, and it's an important way of life, and it's important to help you develop it. Like, I am currently, because and I'm sure it has a lot to do with the fact that I don't have the ability to do it, because when I did have the ability to do it, I wasn't knocking down doors to get this done, but I totally want to take more improv classes, and I totally want to do more improv and, like, do a troupe. Right now I do sketch, and I write screenplays, and that's great. But I would also like to do the improv, because the improv's the, like, I don't know, it's the magical part. It's the part that makes the other two a little shinier, a little cooler. It's the process that I enjoy, and the... You know, something I would totally like to do. But again, like I said, when I had the opportunity to do it, I couldn't do it. I've had a number of failed attempts at improv troupes over the years. Like, and, you know.
I wouldn't say failed attempts.
But there were one or two that went really well. And then I had a bunch where we did it for a couple of months and then it fizzled. And then I tried a new
sure.
group and we did it for a couple of months and then it fizzled.
And none of that was ever because of you. Level of commitment.
No, never.
Exactly.
But that's not the point. It's almost like the band thing that you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you've been in bands, and sometimes it fizzles because you're like, okay, I don't want, either the relationships don't work or the timing doesn't work or, you know, whatever.
I may find a jam buddy at some point or something like that. But as far as me getting on stage with my music, even there's no disassemble, even with my music that I produce, as far as me getting on stage or going on tour with it, like,
but is that even a thing in smaller venues anymore? I mean, like, you know, like as we move forward to videos and such, like, there are entire musicians that don't even tour, because what are they going to do? Sit on stage with a laptop and press a button? Like, I've seen those guys at festivals.
Hey.
It's like, at least have a light show of some kind.
Okay.
Grab a dancer.
At least have a light show.
Like, yeah, no, you guys, when you did your show, you built something. It looked like a weird machine was happening in the background. Like, some sort of avant-garde art piece. Like, that's what's going on. It's almost like Gorillaz.
Yeah.
They have the, they're a bunch of musicians that are busy with other bands. So they probably don't have time to tour together, but they put on the, and they got the cartoons going. Now, I think at this point, now that they're pretty popular as this group, they tour as humans. But they didn't have to. They could just play the music with the cartoons playing in front of the audience, and that gives you exactly it. You get what you were expecting.
Yeah.
Like, and that's cool. You know, that's how they got it done and also kept working on their other projects, you know? And everybody can put it up. It's all about, like, how you want to put yourself out there and that kind of stuff. But what I mean, as far as art can be whatever it needs to be. But I mean, I think you need to connect with people sometimes.
Absolutely.
And I think that you need to be on your own sometimes. I personally, and while I'm nervous to speak to other moms, because in general, we're a tough crowd, I would love to find a mom group and try to, like, hang out and talk to other moms about mom things. Moms, call me.
All right. Maybe HC Universal needs to put on an improv for moms camp.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
It'd be great.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Yeah. I've often thought
moms
about that
and their
kind
kids.
Of thing. It's difficult.
Moms and their kids.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Doing an improv class.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. It's a thing.
It's an idea.
It's a thing now.
I don't like saying these kinds of ideas live on the internet, but I appreciate what you're saying.
The plus side is it originated here. And there's a timestamp now. You see?
Yeah.
Go ahead, try to take it.
What do you think, other than improv for moms, what do you think your, like, goals are for moving forward with having a family and developing your creativity and doing that kind of thing? What do you think your forward motion is?
A lot of my creativity and my creative juices go toward sustainable projects. You know,
sustainable, like a podcast that has multiple episodes?
Yeah. Like I said, I don't consider myself putting out less. I consider myself putting out better quality.
Sure.
You know, like, you aren't on stage as much as you were, but what you're producing is a better quality.
Sure.
As an overall and a general.
Yeah.
So it's one of those, you know, sacrifice the regular for something better.
Mm-hmm.
And I really see myself going much more down that road. I don't know, as a parent, I very much look forward to sharing a lot of my passions with my son.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's quite obviously interested in music and musical instruments, things
mm-hmm.
like that, so.
He's always playing them.
It won't be tough. It'll be pretty easy, I think, to get him involved over here with making some music with Dad.
Mm-hmm.
And doing stuff.
Yeah, that'll certainly be cool. Who knows, maybe he'll have some electronic music buddies that can also be making music with Dad.
Right.
Yeah, in the meantime, I guess I'm here to build the infrastructure of him as I spend each day with him. I try to love him just enough. Not too much so that he becomes one of those mama's boys.
Yeah, yeah.
But just enough that he is confident and knows he's loved and can do things. Mm. Who knows what that'll mean, though? It's a wild, wild world out there, and I'm glad that we're a team.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, and that's really it. I think most people...
Love you.
I love you too, my dear. I think, unfortunately, most people, whether it be relationship, societally, creatively, are not necessarily givers. They aren't necessarily ready to understand that every one of those things takes sacrifice, mm-hmm. takes self-sacrifice, and the fact that you have to be willing to be the one to put yourself out there to fail. So that takes a little gumption in and of itself, but it's also the fact of making it happen. And I think that's probably the biggest lesson that I hope to teach Dalbus. There was a lot of my life where I was emotionally and personally stymied because I gave to people all the time. I did all kinds of things, but I didn't take time to figure myself out and what I needed to be doing. As much as I cared about all those other people and took care of other people, I didn't take care of myself. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get my business in order. I didn't make sure that I was ready for the task and the challenge at hand. Mm. And I think that's really what I want to teach him more than anything is, you know, the concept of being ready for stuff, the concept of being ready for work. Understanding what work is, understanding that there is a reciprocity to the universe, that it is not a zero-sum game with the universe. In order to get it's a reciprocal machine. You have to put something into it in order to get something out of it.
And I'm here to teach him everything means nothing. There's no up, there's no down. It'll all happen.
There is no spoon.
Good luck.
There is no spoon. That's the biggest lesson that we really all have to learn.
There is no spoon.
It came to us decades ago, folks. But it's absolutely a truism. There is no spoon. Like, if you get down to, like, the nitty-gritty of, like, physics and stuff like that, it's the fact that, like, my electron shell is sharing the electron shell with, like, a rhinoceros in Africa right now. Like, this table is not physically here. It's an assemblage of atoms, and that's cool, and it feels like it's physically here, but technically I never touch it. It's just a repulsion of our electron fields, and it feels that way.
Oh my God, his eyes are starting to do that hypnotizing thing again. They're twirling. They're twirling in my face. Oh my God. All right, before we go down another rabbit hole, thank you, audience, for being with us, for listening to us figure it all out and try to be hopeful. I know that talking it out helped me.
Oh, yeah.
I give advice to people to try to see the bigger picture all the time, and I feel like talking it out right now has helped me see the bigger picture. So
good.
Thank you, sweetheart, for being with us. Listen to Dudes and Beer podcast every Tuesday. And thank you guys so much for listening. And enjoy your day.
Check us and our other shows out, scarydad.com. You can also check out Therapy Hour, John Bound Politics, all kinds of good stuff on the HC Universal Network, hcuniversalnetwork.com, everybody. Stop on by and check it out.
All right, guys. Enjoy your Monday.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast.